as police officers, when you first arrive on the scene after you get that horrible, frightening 911 call, what do you do?
Well, you know, Columbine, and we're coming up on the anniversary of Columbine this Friday. Columbine was really the case that changed police response. Years back, and I was on the force then, and I responded to several school shootings back before Columbine. The mode that we operated in was to set up a perimeter, keep people out of the perimeter, and wait for the experts, those being the SWAT teams and the special response teams, and we'd wait for them to move in. Columbine changed all that. We, you know, law enforcement agencies across the country woke up and said, hey, we can't sit back while kids are dying and wait for the experts. We all have to go in. So training began around the country to train just the line-level officer to respond and move in quickly. And it does seem like that's what occurred here in Pennsylvania and several of the school shootings, as well as the today's shooting in Virginia.
Well, there's no doubt about that. School Safety 911, what do people find at that website?
Well, they'll find a series of things. The training we do around the country, primarily we train law enforcement agencies. We also train school districts. We do school crisis assessments to communities. And those are the questions I think that people have to ask tomorrow morning. I know I have two children that go to school here in Sarasota, and a long time ago, I knocked on the door of both their principals, and I wanted to know how easy it is to get on their campus, how long I could stay on their campus without an adult coming over to me and saying, why are you here? Who are you? And what safeguards do my children's schools have to keep, you know, visitors off campus that don't belong there? And those are some things that I think your listeners can do tomorrow.
Though there seems to be a fire restriction, how do you feel about doors being locked when the bell goes off?
You know, I like the idea, and it differs from town to town as to what the fire codes are and what the but again, you know, we train kids. It's one point I've made all day long is we train kids all day long, or I should say all year long in a school, and kids know from the first grade what to do when the fire alarm goes off. They know where to go. They know where to stage, and they know that all throughout their school career, yet we don't do the same kind of drills for school shootings. We've never lost a kid in a fire, and we've lost, you know, hundreds in school shootings, and so we have to start taking a good look at where we're losing our kids.
And you do not think that this is going to be the last?
Absolutely not. Sadly enough, I can say that. I spoke last Friday in San Francisco, California, at a National School Board Conference, and I said our next school shooting is probably just around the corner, and I'm not the amazing Kreskin, but I can just tell you that we still operate in this mode of it can't happen here, and unless we get out of that mode, we'll continue to see these horrific events.
Is it expensive to defend a school?
There are some very simple, basic things we can do. Naturally, technology can help. Especially on a campus as large as the University of Virginia Tech there, it could be very, very costly for schools to outfit themselves with a camera in each hallway. But there are some simple things that schools can do just to engage faculty and staff when you go to the grade level on visitors, who's on our campus, visitor check-in procedures. One central point for schools to check in, and that's a lot more difficult. I do understand that on a college level campus where you have adults coming and going all day long, but technology can be helpful as well.
You know, the old saying, people in the right minds wouldn't do something like this individual, and I'm sure they'll get into it, probably was very, very sick and distraught. And as our previous guest had said, might have had some kind of damage in some form or fashion with his brain.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's one of the things I've noticed over the past probably 10 to 15 years, some of these school shooters, I think when they see them, the ones that haven't killed themselves, you just see this blank stare on their face that they've, a lot of our kids have become so desensitized to killing. It's almost as if we've programmed them into these killing machines, and I think that's where you're going to see a lot of focus on some of the research that's coming out in the future.
They're almost as if, Kurt, they are possessed.
Well, I have a colleague in the field, Dave Grossman, and Dave's an excellent guy, Lieutenant Colonel Grossman. He, part of his job was to train our troops to be desensitized to killing when we went to war. And some of the same techniques they used to desensitize our troops via the video games to keep moving forward, we've done in a way in our community with our video games that are out there now. We've programmed it to just move forward, kill, kill, kill. And so I think you're gonna see some tie-ins to that in the coming days. You're going to start hearing a lot of chatter about that. Very, very scary on the side.
Well, so you think video games might have some kind of contributing factor to all of this?
I do, and I can see it in my own child. The fantasy, when as he comes home, I got a 9-year-old boy, and he comes home and he's telling me, Dad, he knows this new game, and the game involves killing and getting points for how many cars you steal and how many people you kill or rape. And there's absolutely no way I'm letting my child play something like that. But they're some of the hottest selling games out there on the market.
No, you're right, Kurt. Also, what it does is I think it enhances a kid's dexterity. I mean, they become almost experts at either marksmanship or whatever they do. I mean, it is a virtual reality training program.
Oh, absolutely. And now they have them. It's not even you're just handling the controller, but you're standing in front of the TV set with a controller that's actually a gun. And people are coming at you. So I think there's some validity to the fact that we've got to start looking at what we're passing on to our children via the media market and the games that are out there.
When I was a kid, we used to play. We'd have our toy guns. We'd have cap guns. They were cap guns. I mean, they made the little pop sound. But I got to tell you, not once did I ever think about wanting to kill someone or to point a real gun at someone. I knew, even at the age of 8, 9, or 10, that it was a toy. My friends did, too. We played. We played cops and robbers, and we did the whole thing. Why were we okay then, playing with guns? I mean, today, you look at kids running around the street with guns, people would freak.
Right.
Toy guns.
Absolutely. And as a matter of fact, there are states that have now state laws that toy guns have to be painted certain colors so that law enforcement doesn't take it as a real gun.
As a real gun, sure.
And that's some of the stuff we're seeing today. I mean, there certainly is. I saw a study once on the number of deaths by shooting that kids watch in TV today versus what we may have watched in the 60s. And the number it was just on, you certainly didn't see it on Green Acres or Pettigo Junction. And it's changed. It's changed considerably. My kids, even myself, they sit home and watch TV, and you can't watch them 24 hours a day. And they are exposed to a lot more violence than we were as kids.